Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Final hour on this Monday. Next man up, 102.5. The Game, Jake, Lyman, Parker, Kelly, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Titans falling yesterday, 34-26 to the Saints, now 3-13. We'll talk more Titans in this final hour. Also, the Predators play tonight in the Ice Age game. Predators against the Mammoth in Utah. We'll talk about that at the end of the show as well. But did want to get to some college football. We were out for the last 3 days of the week, so we missed the announcement from Michigan, Kyle Whittingham taking the job. And we'll get to that in a second. But first, Parker, a tradition unlike any other happened back on Saturday. The Pop-Tarts Bowl, BYU and Georgia Tech. The trophy ceremony, the edible Pop-Tarts mascots, I mean, it's all just perfect. Putting up the Ring of Honor for the fallen Pop-Tarts mascots from the previous 2 years, it just doesn't get much better than that. It really doesn't.
I felt so bad for the NFL having to compete against the Pop-Tarts Bowl, the People's National Championship. It delivered. I woke up that morning and I completely forgot the NFL was on because all I was worried about was the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
There you go.
If you don't think that this won't come up in studio on Wednesday when Corey Curtis is here, you're dead wrong because I'm bringing it up.
Yeah.
We had a Pop-Tart opt out of being sacrificed at the end of the game.
Yeah.
How incredible is that?
The Pop-Tarts Bowl somehow finds a way to improve on itself every single year. And
it's become a beacon of college football.
It really has. I mean, I don't think any bowl game has as much cultural impact as the Pop-Tarts Bowl has over the past 3 years. And I'm being mostly facetious when I say that. But, yeah, we'll have to bring up the Pop-Tarts Bowl to Corey Curtis. He said no one cares about it. Clearly, that is different.
Wrong.
America cares about the
Pop-Tarts America Bowl. Is behind the Pop-Tarts Bowl, Corey.
We do have some meaningful college football playoff games coming up this week. We'll have Ohio State and Miami on Wednesday night, and then the other three quarterfinal matchups coming up on Thursday on New Year's Day. Indiana taking on Alabama, Ole Miss and Georgia, and then, of course, Oregon and Texas Tech. So all of those games coming up this week to set the semifinals, which will be about a week next weekend. The 8th and 9th, I believe, is when they are set for. But big day coming up on Friday as well. The one portal window that they've changed to opens up on Friday. It is January 2nd through the 15th, I believe, is the portal window. And Kyle Whittingham taking the Michigan job is that final big domino. But you look around college football at how many jobs changed hands this year. I mean, just in the SEC alone, Arkansas, Auburn, Kentucky, Ole Miss, LSU, Florida. Am I missing any? I think it's
in the
six.
SEC?
Six out of the 16
yeah, yeah.
in
yep.
the SEC. Penn State, Virginia Tech, Michigan.
Michigan State.
There have been so many jobs that have opened and been taken elsewhere. And, of course, all of those have domino effects of, you know, John Sumrall leaves Tulane. He's at Florida. Tulane has an opening. Alex Golish leaves South Florida to go to Auburn. Now South Florida has an opening. Memphis, Ryan Silverfield leaves. They have an opening. So all of the dominoes have fallen, for the most part, the big name ones. And I think that means that this portal season is going to be crazy. That doesn't necessarily mean all of these guys are following their coaches. Like, do I think some Penn State guys are going to leave to go to Virginia Tech? Yes. I'm sure that there's going to be some ties of Byron Brown, who already announced he's entering the portal. Does he follow Alex Golish to Auburn? And
by the way, speaking of Auburn, Cam Coleman just entered the transfer portal.
Wow.
Or has set to announce that he's going to enter the transfer portal.
Yes. So that's big. I love Cam Coleman. I think that is a first-round pick in 2027. So that's what I'm saying. We've already seen some big names enter. I mean, the five stars with Lagway and Raiola both entering the portal. You've got some other quarterbacks who are in there. Sorsby from Cincinnati, who has been linked to a couple of big-name jobs. Quarterback positions, I guess I should say. They are jobs now, though. I think you're going to see a lot of guys following from coach to coach, but I just think in general there's going to be a mass exodus of players into the transfer portal this year. And because it's so condensed and it's only 2 weeks and this is the only time you can go, we're going to see a flurry of moves starting on Friday. Because as much as we like to talk about how, well, the portal doesn't open until January 2nd, we've been getting announcements of these guys transferring for weeks now. And to act like these schools aren't finding ways to communicate with these guys before the transfer portal officially opens on Friday is crazy. I think it's going to be a lot like the NFL free agency frenzy of somehow right as the portal opens, or maybe within a day or two of the portal opening, all these guys are going to know where they're going and announce where they're going. And we're going to see a lot of huge names change schools probably within the next week and a half, right? Like up until these guys have to get registered for classes. Classes at a lot of schools are starting, I would guess, the second week of January, like January 12th. So I am excited to see what the portal looks like, but I also think it's going to upset a lot of the traditional college football fans that you might see half of some rosters enter the portal in the next couple of days.
No, it's going to happen. And let's not kid ourselves. The portal's open now because 10 very notable quarterbacks have announced their intention to enter the portal, but have already been in contact with schools. So this thing is already open. But really, since the transfer portal became a thing, it's gotten crazier and crazier every year. So it really should not be much of a surprise. I think college football, you know, kind of made it better where they condensed it into one portal window that opens up between the fall and spring semester. The calendar is still very wacky, and that needs to be fixed clearly, but at least it's one window now. But also, too, the players that are currently in the playoff, for those that lose, they have 5 days after they lose to enter the portal if they so wish.
Right. So that's how they've changed it with these schools that are already in the playoff. But we saw it last year with some of these teams. The rumors were they were having to pay their players just to not transfer before they played their college football playoff games. Like, not just a bowl game. I get it. Some of these guys, it's like they believe there's more money out there for them. What's the point of playing in this bowl game? But it's to play for a national championship. And I think that's just the way college football is going. And you're right, with the way they've condensed it down, it's going to be more of a frenzy than it ever has been before. And there's going to be some surprises out there. I'm interested to see what Vanderbilt, what Tennessee does in the portal. Do either of those teams go in at a quarterback? Where do they prioritize their NIL? I think for Vanderbilt, they're losing a lot on the offensive line. I think that's where you've got to look for some of that. For Tennessee, we can talk more about the Music City Bowl tomorrow, but for Tennessee, a lot of guys opting out, whether that's for the draft or for other reasons, but I think both Tennessee and Vanderbilt could be very active in the portal starting this week.
Yeah, and I've talked to somebody that's very close to the Tennessee situation, and if they decide to bring in a quarterback from the transfer portal, the rumor has been Brendan Sorsby from Cincinnati.
Yes.
Because he has family that just recently moved to Knoxville, but also his asking price is $4 million, and you'd get him for a year. So, and this, again, this Brendan Sorsby is a great talent. He's certainly valued highly among NFL draft scouts because of his intangibles, but if you're getting him for 1 year, and it wasn't like he was Big 12 Player of the Year or anything like that, so I'm just not sure if it's worth it.
Man, the fact that Brendan Sorsby is getting $4 million a year, and obviously that's not confirmed, but that seems to just be the going
rate.
That
seems the top of the market right now.
I mean, that is
Sam Levitt, Mestemaker.
Right. Lagway,
Josh
Iola,
Hoover.
Josh Hoover is a,
even
yeah,
Byron Brown maybe in that category as well.
Bo Prabula gonna be out there as well. Like
Rocco Becht.
Rocco Becht, who the guess is that he's gonna follow his head coach Matt Campbell to Penn State. But you're right, it's gonna be crazy, and the numbers out there are going to be insane. It's just where college football is going. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to text or call our phone lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Dustin from Hopkinsville says, so those giant Pop-Tarts are real? Yeah. The dancing ones are people. They go into the toaster and then they stick out edible Pop-Tarts. So, Dustin, they are not actually cooking them. I don't know if that was
what
they
are
asking.
They are. No, I tweeted out something on Saturday. I'm like, only in college football can you witness a murder on national live television and it be nationally accepted.
Yeah. You know, and if you want to believe that they're actually toasting the mascots, then you go right ahead and do it. It's.
Did you listen to Kalani Sitake after? You know how grateful he was just to be there, and we'll eat whatever you give us, whatever you have left over to spare, we will eat. I thought it was phenomenal. I love it.
The
I love
trophy
it.
Is the best too. That it's a toaster that you can put the Pop-Tarts in. It's great. Everything is great. Michael and Madison, this is a real one right here. He says, "I've got my Pop-Tart bowl quarter zip on right now, and just ordered $130 more worth of merch."
Where did you get it? I was actually talking to Connor about this yesterday. If the Pop-Tarts bowl had like a pop-up shop, you know how much money
I
they
bet
would
you
make?
Could find it online.
I would buy a quarter. Ask that texter. I need to know where I can get a quarter.
We should look
zip.
During the break and see if we can.
I need
find
a quarter
some,
zip with sprinkles on
with
it.
With sprinkles, yes. And I love that the helmets had sprinkles on it for Georgia Tech and BYU.
In the end zones, it was beautiful. The America's and the People's National Championship game.
615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to text or
take
call.
That,
again,
Corey.
Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Yeah, no Pop-Tarts Bowl haters on this program. We won't accept
it. I love
it.
Corey, but I still am baffled at the fact he said that. Like, let us enjoy our bowl games, Corey. Don't be such a Grinch.
If there's one non-playoff bowl game that always lives up to the hype,
it's that one.
It's that one. It is for sure. We'll continue to talk college football on the other side. We'll get into the Titans and their draft position with 1 week left to go in the NFL season, and we'll talk some Preds before we wrap up the show. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you on this Monday. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you. A few more segments on this Monday. Finishing up our conversation around college football before we get back into the Titans. And Parker, we talked about the coaching carousel spinning to a stop after what has been one of the craziest cycles I think we've ever seen, with all of the SEC jobs that opened up, James Franklin getting fired at Penn State, hired at Virginia Tech, and of course the Michigan scandal that has led to Kyle Whittingham taking that job. And looking at that hire specifically, Parker, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I like Kyle Whittingham as the coach, obviously, and what he's done at Utah has been really impressive, but it feels like a Band-Aid move for Michigan of they had to make a coaching change late in the cycle where a lot of the big-time candidates had already either been swept up by somebody else or had signed extensions with their current school. You go and get Whittingham, who he said he wasn't retiring when he stepped down at Utah, but I would guess he's not too far away from that. I think this is a Band-Aid move for Whittingham for 3-4 years, and hopefully he can keep Michigan football afloat. And then when he eventually does retire, you're in a better position to sign somebody as your head coach who you think can be the long-term solution.
And I'll do a quick plug. I recorded an instant reaction to this, and it's up on our podcast network. I couldn't wait till Monday to get my full thoughts out on this. But, no, you're right. And the first thing that you got to ask yourself is this an upgrade from Sharon Moore? And I think the general consensus is yes. Because if you think about it in a hypothetical sense with Sharon Moore, let's pretend none of the off-the-field issues happened whatsoever. If Sharon Moore was a candidate on the open market, would he be a hot commodity?
Yeah, it's a great point.
I think the answer is probably not. So you go out and you get Kyle Whittingham, and Michigan has a lot of internal just, you know, they have to get everything in line because it's not just football. Juwan Howard, too. Juwan Howard had his issues with basketball.
Right. There's a lot of fires that have had to be put out in the Michigan athletic department
lately. Exactly. So you go and you get Kyle Whittingham from Utah, who nationally could not have a better reputation.
Right.
And he's 66 years old. I think he's the fourth oldest active head coach in FBS. So you go and you get him. You sign him to a five-year deal. This is a bridge move. This is to bring stability. This is to get Michigan back to, you know, what the term Michigan man used to mean and represent. This is exactly what you're doing. And the style that he has at Utah fits Michigan perfectly. Good at the line of scrimmage, good on defense, loves to run the football.
Yeah.
So you go and you get Kyle Whittingham, you bring him in for 5 years, you set the program up to then go out, get your next head coach who can lead you into the future.
Yeah, I saw a tweet the other day. Kyle Whittingham follows 5 women on Instagram and all of them are fully clothed.
I saw that too.
It's a great start for
I declined to comment.
For Michigan. Looking at the Big Ten in general, do you view Michigan in the same tier as some of the top teams there moving forward? I feel like the hierarchy in the Big Ten has shifted in a big way, even over like the last 2 years. You look back 2 years ago, Washington and Michigan played in a national championship game. And I get it, Washington wasn't part of the Big Ten back then. But with the coaching changes that have happened, Jim Harbaugh leaves for the NFL, Kalen DeBoer leaves for Alabama, I think Michigan and Washington are no longer in that top tier. If I'm looking at teams that I believe in the Big Ten for the next 5 to 10 years, and a lot can change, let's say 5 years, it's Ohio State and Oregon, obviously, and I think you can put Indiana in there. Again, I'm going to not doubt Kurt Cignetti. I don't know if they're going to win a national championship this year, but I think he's shown enough that you believe they're going to sustain being a playoff contender every year. But I think it's those three. I don't know if I believe in Penn State, Michigan, Washington, USC, that next tier of Big Ten schools to be consistent playoff contenders for the next 5 years.
And those of us that watch the sport, and this is no shot on the Big Ten, it's a top-heavy league. We all know that. You have your Indianas, your Oregons, your Ohio States that are you know, the top of college football. And then when you look in the Big Ten, yeah, you kind of have the second tier of teams, Michigan and maybe a Penn State on most years.
Yeah, you could put Iowa in there too. Of these teams, that they're good teams, but they're not going to be a national championship.
And then there's a fall off. And then you have like your Illinois, your sometimes your Michigan States. So I would consider Michigan in that second realm.
Yeah,
because
for sure.
They have, you know, they're coming off a 9-3 season. They still have Bryce Underwood. They need desperately. I think they're going to go out and attack the portal and get some pass catchers for him because that's what they need. So if they get that figured out, I could absolutely see them vaulting themselves into this conversation. But right now they're a tier two team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, the Big Ten. When we had the conversations over the summer about the 4-4-2-2 model of the college football playoff, it was always about, does the Big Ten consistently year in and year out have four playoff-worthy teams? And I think there's going to be a rotation where some years maybe there's five playoff-worthy teams out of the Big Ten, but other years maybe there's only two or three. Looking at the SEC, we talked about 6 coaching changes in that league. Next year is going to be, it could be a turning point year for the SEC. You look at the teams at the top, I think Georgia you feel good about being consistently solid and being in the playoffs almost every single year. But is Kalen DeBoer going to be the guy at Alabama long term? I think next year is the year to decide that. If they go 9-3 next year, Alabama's going to have to probably fire him and find somebody else, which, again, it's crazy to say because that doesn't happen most places. Is Ole Miss going to be able to maintain what they were doing under Lane Kiffin? Is LSU going to be able to get back to being a perennial contender with Lane Kiffin there? What does Florida look like with John Sumrall? Auburn with Alex Golish? Does Vanderbilt continue their trajectory, and do they stay up there in that 8-9-10 win range? Next year is going to be very important, and Tennessee, I think, is another one of those teams that you look at. They're Tennessee fans who aren't too pleased with Josh Heupel right now, and that doesn't mean that he should be on the hot seat, but I think another year where this team isn't playing for a playoff spot down the stretch is when that seat starts to heat up. So next year across the SEC, really up and down with the exception of a couple of teams, you really don't know what to expect. It could go one way, it could go the other. And I'm intrigued to see, especially with 9 league games now, what that looks like with all of the changes that we've seen this offseason.
And I think that's fair, too, because Georgia's been kind of the stalwart of the SEC because Kirby's smart, the culture that he's established. But there are really questions all across the SEC. And if you look at the bottom, you know, Mississippi State, what do they look like in year 3 under Jeff Lebby? They took a giant step this year. What do they do in year 3? Auburn with Alex Golish, Florida with John Sumrall, Kentucky with Will Stein, Missouri, do they, you know, take a step back?
Yeah.
What does Matt Zollers look like? So, I mean, there are questions all over the place, and that's what makes the conference so entertaining because from top to bottom, it's very competitive week in and week out.
Yep, and still not done with the 2025 season yet. Still have the quarterfinals coming up this week, Wednesday and Thursday, semis, and then, of course, the national championship and the transfer portal. We've talked about it. I think it's going to be pure insanity, and that's going to have a large portion of what those teams do look like when we come back in the fall. Does Lane Kiffin poach a bunch of Ole Miss's roster and build LSU immediately back into a contender? That's going to all play out in the next 2 weeks, and that's what's great about having one portal window is you don't have to worry if you're a coach heading into spring practice that you might lose some guys, but also it might be a little tougher to retain your roster because these guys don't have a whole lot of time to make these decisions. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. If you want to text or call, our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll talk a lot more college football with Nick Frazier tomorrow. We'll look ahead at some of these quarterfinal games, Ohio State, Miami on Wednesday, and then the other three, Texas Tech, Oregon, Indiana, Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, coming up on Thursday, New Year's Day. So we'll talk about all of those tomorrow. But when we come back, we'll get back into the Titans. Titans did lose yesterday. Blew a 13-point lead at one point. They were up 13-0. Now 3-13. We'll talk about where they stand in the draft order and where things could shake out as we roll along towards the end of the season with just 1 week left. We'll talk about it next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you for 30 more minutes on this Monday. Chasing Big Joe coming up at the top of the hour. Back into the Titans here. Titans fell yesterday 34-26 to the Saints. Now 3-13 on the year. They'll face the Jaguars in Duval on Sunday. That is now officially a noon kick.
Duval.
Taking on Liam Cohen and his 12-4 Jaguars, who are trying to win the AFC South. So Jaguars almost certainly will be playing everybody in that game, and they are 11.5-point favorites right now. So you have to make a guess. Titans not going to win this game. Not impossible, but very unlikely, which would put the Titans at 3-14 for the second straight year. I know a lot of people are looking at the draft positioning, and that's what we wanted to look at here quickly before we wrap up the show. Right now, the Titans are slated to pick 4th in the NFL draft at 3-13. They are tied with the New York Giants, the New York Jets, and the Arizona Cardinals. And the Titans slot in at 3rd out of 4 when you look at that strength of schedule tiebreaker, and we can get into that in a second. So if you look at the way this lines up, the Titans, at the very lowest, no matter what they do on Sunday, even if they win and everybody else loses, the Titans can pick as low as 7th in the draft. That is it. That is the lowest that they can pick. If the Titans win, they would pick either 6th or 7th, most likely. If the Titans were to lose, the lowest that they could pick is 5th. And likely 4th. And we can go through the strength of schedule stuff here. So the Titans and Cardinals are the two that you want to look at. Right now, the Titans do have a slightly easier strength of schedule, which is what you want to improve your draft position. In Week 18, you want to be rooting for the Bengals to beat the Browns, the Cowboys to beat the Giants, and we can get back to that in a second, Green Bay to beat Minnesota, the Falcons to beat the Saints, and the Dolphins to beat the Patriots. Those are the games that can impact the Titans' strength of schedule. You're rooting for those 5 results. The Bengals game is the most important, according to Tankathon. The Titans do have a slight edge on the Cardinals, 576 strength of schedule with 580. So it seems likely that if the Titans lose, they will pick in the top 4, which not going to be good enough for you to trade out. I think that that hope has probably left the building at this point. Now, there's still an outside chance. The Titans could pick as high as second in the draft, but you would need to lose. You'd need to have a worse strength of schedule than Arizona, and you'd need the Giants and the Jets to win. I don't really see a path for the Titans to catch the Jets in strength of schedule right now. It's about a 0.03 difference between the two. The Giants play the Cowboys. I don't know how much the Cowboys are going to be playing for anything, right? Like, they're 7-8-1. They're eliminated. They're more talented than the Giants, but that game is in New York. I wouldn't call it impossible, but unlikely. And then the question for the Jets becomes, what are the Bills trying to do? The Bills are going to be a wild card team. They cannot win the AFC East, so they will be either the 5, 6, or 7 seed, and right now those three teams are tied, Houston, L.A., and Buffalo. The question is, does Sean McDermott and his Bills team really care about who they play and the path that they have? Because if you're the 5, yes, you get to play the winner of the AFC North, which I guess is better, but if it is the Ravens and Lamar Jackson gets healthy, maybe you don't want to go to Baltimore for that game. I don't know. And that would be if you're the 5 seed. The 6 seed will likely go to Jacksonville or Houston, depending on who wins the AFC South. And then the 7 seed will go to either Denver or New England. So does Buffalo care about where they want to go? And if they don't, then they may rest their starters, and that makes the Jets winning at least a little more likely. But,
well, with the loss yesterday, they can't win the AFC East. So,
right.
And Josh Allen looked pretty banged up with the foot. So.
He did. I would guess maybe Josh Allen doesn't play in that game. But do I believe in the Jets to win even if they're facing the Bills' backups? I don't know. That Jets game yesterday was
ugly. But, too, I mean,
ugly.
Like, them and the Texans and the Chargers are all 5, 6, 7 interchangeable there. So if you want to win and you don't want to have to go to Denver, you don't want to have to go to New England, then they may play their starters. I have no idea.
Yeah. So that's the path if the Titans want to move up in the draft order. You would need either the Giants or the Jets to win. Unlikely, which means the Titans' hope of trading out of a top pick is very unlikely. Teams maybe would want to trade up for a player at 4, but it wouldn't be a quarterback. And teams, unless it's the Jaguars with Travis Hunter, aren't usually willing to give up multiple first-round picks to come up for a non-quarterback. So the Titans likely going to be picking 4th or 5th, and that's still in a decent spot to get an elite player. Chip from Mount Juliet on the text line says, need the quarterback class to rise. Hopefully teams will reach as they always do. Titans can trade back. I just don't see it. Mendoza and Moore right now are the conversation for 1 and 2, but do you feel truly confident that those guys are locks to go 1 and 2? I don't know. I think the Raiders are going to take Mendoza at 1, unless they somehow find a way to win, which, again, unlikely based on the way they're playing right now. And I would guess somebody might trade up for Dante Moore, but is anybody else worthy of trading up for at quarterback? Probably not. And Andrew makes a good point here. He says, I'm so tired of Titans fans acting like if we can't trade out, the draft is a bust. 30 teams build rosters with good players without trading out every year. We have milkmen playing at cornerback, so just go get some good players and stop worrying. And I think that's the mindset that Titans fans should have. Yes, we spent most of the year talking about the number one pick and the haul of assets that you could get back, which that is the ideal scenario to be in. We've said it the whole time. Having the number one pick and already feeling like you have your quarterback, that's a great spot to be because you can get that king's ransom of picks. But just because the Titans didn't get that and they won some games down the stretch doesn't mean that this team is not going to look better next year, because they're going to get a blue chip prospect with where they're picking at the top of the draft. There are some really good non-quarterbacks at the top of the draft. And at this point, maybe if you put together these two texts from Andrew and Chip, if you could get the quarterback class to rise and maybe a third guy does step in, you could get your pick of whoever the best non-quarterback is in the draft, which isn't as valuable as two firsts, a second, and a third. Maybe not. But it's still great to be able to say we got the best non-quarterback in the draft that we can add to this team that is desperate for playmakers.
Yeah, that's why I can't get behind all this tank talk, because if the Titans really are this bad, it'll all work out, even if they did win two out of their last four, because they're slated to pick fourth. So this team just needs playmakers. It just needs elite talent. There's plenty of that available at the top of the draft. And even if you're lucky enough, fortunate enough to find a trade partner and acquire two picks, maybe one later in the first round, an early second, or however it might be, you're still going to get a very, very good player, and it'll all work out.
Mike in Lebanon says, basically nothing is working out for the Titans again. Got it. You got to take – sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't. Last year, the Titans, in the beginning of December, looked like they had zero shot at the number one pick, and you were wondering, what is this team going to do? Because Levis clearly wasn't the guy, and you were going to be picking fifth or sixth and weren't going to have a chance to go get a quarterback. And the football gods smiled upon you. Drew Lock wins a game against the Colts. Joe Milton wins a game against the Bills. And boom, you're picking first overall. Last year, everything did work out for the Titans. This year, the Titans look like one of the worst teams in NFL history through 12 weeks of the season, and they've started to figure some things out. I think that has value too, even if it does end up costing you what that trade would have looked like if you had the number one pick. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to text or call. Let's go to our phone lines. Adam from Portland is called in. Adam, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, man, I wasn't fully convinced we were going to have a trade partner anyway. So, like, here's my question, and now I'll ask both of you guys this. So, do you think, is there any chance if the Titans had Aiden Hutchinson on this team this year, what would you think their record would be? Like, just that one player.
I think Aiden Hutchinson is probably a player who's worth an extra win.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
But just imagine like how dominant Jeffrey Simmons was this year, man. And thinking like they had to put three guys on him a lot of times. Like that's how, and he made a lot of players that were no good look good. Put one talented player on that defensive line with him, and I think it could be a game wrecker. So, and you could get that at four, I think, right? And Bane more than likely is going to be there, or the other guy is going to be there at four. So just look forward to that, dude. I trust Borgonzi. I'm not going to sit here and go, what if, all season. I'm still glad we won last week. I hope we win at the end of the season. Like, I want us to win football games, and I trust Borgonzi. But if we have one good edge rusher, man, I think it could change our football team.
Yeah, and the Titans, it can be disappointing that you didn't get the trade, because that was the conversation for 3 months with how bad the Titans were, is if you're picking at one, somebody's going to want a quarterback and is going to come up. And it can be disappointing to not have that scenario in play anymore, but you have to realize you're still going to get a really good player. You are. There is going to be a high-level pass rusher or wide receiver that you can take at four or five or whatever it is, and is going to help your football team for a long time as long as you get the pick right. And that's on Mike Borgonzi to make sure he finds the right player. But there are going to be really good players available to you. And that, like Adam said, if you are able to add competent players in the secondary and competent players in some other aspects of this team, and then add a playmaker at wide receiver or edge, that could make this team a couple more wins better next year than even they would be if you just got better play from the guys you already have. You hope that the young guys are going to develop, and that could be worth a couple of wins. Can you get the star players to surround them with, along with the meat of the rest of the roster that you're missing right now. 2501 says, how has Brinker not been mentioned for how poor the team has performed, drafted, and fired yet? I agree with you. I think Brinker has skated under the radar.
Oh, I've banged that drum.
We've said that a ton, but he's not getting fired, so there's really no point in beating the dead horse. And he says, how can we trust Borgonzi? He assembled the roster for this year. Mike Borgonzi was not left with a whole lot of good things on this roster. He did his best to add some young talent and avenge some of the mistakes that were made by the previous organization. We're going to find out a lot about Mike Borgonzi this year. He is stepping into a pretty solid situation this offseason as a GM. You get to hire a coach, you got $130 million in cap space, and you got a top five pick. go and fix this roster and make this team competitive again. We'll find out a lot about what Mike Borgonzi is capable of next year. And I'm not saying that next year is make or break for him, but if he's not able to at least raise this roster to being a team that's in the hunt in late November, December, then maybe you start to have questions about his ability to build the team. But as of right now, I don't blame Borgonzi for how bad this team is. I blame the decisions made before him. We'll see if he's able to fix it with all of the resources he has at his disposal this year. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Last call for phones if you have any thoughts. On the other side, we will talk a little Preds to wrap up the show. The Predators are on this 7-game road trip. A win in Minnesota to start it, a loss in St. Louis. They are in Utah tonight. We'll talk some Preds to wrap up the show. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you, wrapping up the show on this Monday. Chase and Big Joe coming up right after us. Tomorrow on the program, Nick Frazier is in for Tony Tuesdays. We'll talk a lot of college football, some Titans, as we head into week 18 of the NFL season and the college football playoff quarterfinals coming up starting on Wednesday. I did promise some Preds talk. We will talk some Preds to wrap up the show, but did want to mention at the top of the 11 o'clock hour, Marcus Freeman on Twitter tweeting, 2026, run it back, go Irish. So you can cross Marcus Freeman off of your list of who could be the Titans head coach. I know he's been mentioned a lot for the Titans, a lot for the Giants, but Marcus Freeman has at least announced on Twitter that he is going to come back for 2026. I did see this from John Glennon. He put out the current odds for the Titans' next head coach. The top five are Matt Nagy at one, Mike McCarthy at two, Arthur Smith, Jesse Minter, Joe Brady, and Cliff Kingsbury. So that's at least what the odds makers say. I'm not sure you can really take too much stock in that, considering the Titans haven't put in any interview slips yet, but we will see. But all the way down at 50-1. John Gruden never goes away.
Let's see your snap count.
Anyway, the Titans, we'll talk a ton about coaching search stuff starting a week from today. Week from today is Black Monday. So we will start to know who the Titans will be competing against for head coaching candidates, and the Titans will start to request some of those interviews. But into the Preds, they were able to get the win in Minnesota last Tuesday, which was huge. That was a game, we talked about the Preds last week and said, that's a game that you don't really expect to go in and win, but they did. And they showed a lot of fight to be able to get that win in overtime against the Wild. But then you go out and you lose to the Blues, and it's a Blues team that you had gotten twice pretty bad. You beat them 7-2 at home, then went into St. Louis 2 weeks ago today and beat them 5-2. The Blues got their revenge 3-2 on Saturday. But tonight, you've got the Utah Mammoth, the Ice Age game, as it's affectionately known, the Predators and the Mammoth. That is an 8 p.m. puck drop, 7 o'clock pregame coverage right here on 102.5 The Game. This is a big week for the Predators. You've got this game against Utah. And if you look at the standings, Utah kind of in the thick of things with the Predators, who have dug their way back into the wild card race. Right now, the Predators are 3 points out of a playoff spot, and Utah is currently tied for a playoff spot. So this is a big one if the Preds want to make up some ground. Then you look ahead on New Year's Eve. The Predators take on the Vegas Golden Knights as part of this 7-game road trip. And then a back-to-back with Seattle coming up on Thursday. Seattle, another team that is in that mix for those final wild card spots. Still haven't reached the halfway point of the season. There's a long way to go. But these are the type of games on the road. If you could just steal a couple of points, it's going to go a long way. Preds have already gotten 2 points on this road trip. I said I'd like to see them get 8-ish.
8?
8, 9, 10.
Yeah, because this isn't a road trip. You can just get 4 and be. You got to get more.
Yeah, so. I mean, you got to keep your head above water, because when you come back, you do have a ton of home games coming up. You got the Islanders, Blackhawks, Caps, and Oilers all 4 in a row. Then you go on the road for a back-to-back and come back for 3 more. So the Preds are going to have a ton of home games coming up, but this road trip, you got to be able to stay where you are in the playoff standings, because you've already dug yourself out of that early hole. You can't find yourself back in it. And I think tonight's an important game. Utah, again, it has 39 points. The Preds are at 36, although the Preds do have two games in hand against Utah. So Nashville's right back into this thing. And
which is crazy because we were talking about them as dead in the water.
Right. I mean,
before December got started.
Something has clicked, and I'm really excited that they're at least playing meaningful hockey, which last year was not really the case at this point, and we thought maybe it was going to trend in the same direction. I'm excited we're going to have Max Herzog on Friday, as we always do. He will be on the road in Calgary coming off that back-to-back against Vegas and Seattle. So before we talk to Max Herz, three more Preds games, three of them. You've got Utah tonight, Vegas on Wednesday, Seattle on Thursday. Split the points in those games. If you could go 1-1-1, I think that's solid and at least puts you in a decent spot moving forward. But, you know, tough loss against St. Louis. That's one that if you won, I think you really could have started to get back on the train of, okay, this team is for real. They slipped up. Can they bounce back after the day off yesterday, I think is going to be huge. But yeah, 8 o'clock puck drop tonight for the Preds, 7 o'clock pregame. Excited to see if they can have a bounce back performance and continue to score goals like they have for the last couple of weeks. It's been fun to watch, and I'm hoping that when they come back from this 7-game road trip that they're still in the mix and we start to get those crowds and the buzz around Bridgestone Arena again.
Because when the Preds are good, man, there's not many more things fun to do in Nashville than go to a Preds game when Bridgestone's buzzing. Got a couple late puck drops as well. 8 p.m. tonight.
Right.
I mean, 9 p.m. puck drop on New Year's Day.
That's these West Coast games. Last year, I was working the New Year's Eve game, and it was a 9 o'clock puck drop. So I ran in 2025 in this building.
I did a 9:30 puck drop one time when they were out at San Jose. I think we wrapped up about 1 a.m. We had Robbie on. You know Robbie likes to get in and out. So
it's brutal, though. I mean, imagine for these East Coast teams. It's like for some of those guys, if you go out to the West Coast, you might have a 10 o'clock puck drop. That's crazy.
Ooh, it's tough. Those Vancouver – that Vancouver playoff series?
Yeah.
I cannot keep my eyes open for the whole game.
It was brutal. At least there were a couple of day games in that series, but some of those late ones, those were tough. But the Preds take on the Utah Mammoth tonight, part of this 7-game road trip, third game of the 7-game road trip. We'll see if the Preds can add a couple more points tonight. That'll about wrap things up for us today on the show. Again, tomorrow, Nick Frazier will be in with us. I believe he just walked into the room. So excited to have Nick Frazier on. We'll talk all things Titans, all things college football. We'll get into the Preds and much more. And again, usual lineup this week with the exception of Thursday where we won't have a show for New Year's Day, but Corey Curtis will be back on Wednesday and we'll talk some Pop-Tarts Bowl with Corey.
Yes, we will.
Chase and Big Joe are coming up next. They'll have plenty of thoughts on the Titans' loss yesterday to the Saints. Again, we will be back tomorrow. Keep it right here. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.